Hello and welcome to Journey to a Dream, brought to you by Kawasaki Insurance and supported by the Andreas Racing Association here on the Isle of Man. This is the podcast where we talk to people who essentially are passionate about motorsport. And as we speak, it is nearly MGP and Classic TT 2025. The sun, I'm touching wood, is shining. The forecast certainly for the next few days looks good as well, so everything is crossed. And today we're going to talk to two people, and we've talked so many times about sponsorship on this podcast. We're actually going to hear from a sponsor today and also one of the people that he supports. Let's meet them.
My name's Robert Taylor from Across, based in the Midlands. I have a company there, Atherstone Accident Repair Centre, and I've been sponsoring riders since 1997. Got involved with Francesco last year. Had one of my bikes to do the Manx Grand Prix on.
Hi, my name is Francesco Feraldo. I'm 32 years old, and as you can hear, I'm Italian. I came over here in 2019 and I opened my business, and it's called Feraldo Racing.
Brilliant to have you both here on the Journey to a Dream podcast. Thank you so much. Great time to be talking to you as well. We're just ahead of MGP and Classic TT 2025. I just want to ask you first though, Bob. You are known as Wobbly Bob, I understand.
That's correct, yeah.
I just have to find out, first of all, because Jim Hunter referred to you as that when we were talking to some of the organisers of the MGP in a podcast that we published a few weeks ago, and he said Wobbly Bob. Where did that nickname come from?
Well, I used to sponsor a lad called Matt Jackson from just outside Blackpool. And at the time, he was working for a brewery as a rep, and they brewed Wobbly Bob Bitter. And we were celebrating in the creek one night after, I think, Matt had finished fifth in the 125 TT. And we came out there a bit tipsy and I saw a tripped a bit. And Matt said, oh, Wobbly Bob. So, and then he said, Wobbly Bob Racing. And so that's what we, just for a laugh, that's what we did. We called it Wobbly Bob Racing, and it's stuck ever since.
The rest is history, as they say. Yeah. And it's really interesting hearing about your passion. So you live over in the UK, but you're over here quite often.
Yes, I do. I get over here as much as I can. I love the island. I've been coming. My first TT was 1971. Just blew me away. And apart from the racing, nightlife and the Hawaiian bar and all those places, it was just a blur, I'm afraid. Going back then, I look back and I think, what a fantastic period to come and to the island. You know, it was amazing. Just blew me away.
And did you have an interest in bikes from a riding point of view?
I had bikes on the road, but obviously, like most of my generation and the generation before, we started off with an old 125 Bantam or something like that going round the fields. And I just sort of progressed from there, really. And I had a friend who, his brother was went to Australia in the late 50s and he used to race in Australia. So that sort of got us into the racing a bit, going to our local track, Mallory Park, and places like that, you know, in the 60s, saw Mike Arlwood and Bill Ivey, Phil Reed, you know, to name just a few, you know, unbelievable.
But racing yourself wasn't something that you kind of thought about doing?
No. But I have done the parade laps a few times, which I was never man enough to go racing, but I admire them, you know, the lads who do it, even the older boys, you know, the likes of Chris McGarn, who's getting on for 75 and he's still at it. So, you know, I do, you know, I admire them. You know, and Arthur Browning as well. But Arthur's retired now, but he was riding up till he was 75. I used to sponsor Arthur. Great all-rounder on a bike. So he's ridden all sorts, speedway, trials, motocross, and I think he started road racing late in life because I believe while his mother was alive, she wouldn't let him ride on the Isle of Man. I think that's the story anyway. So,
and you know, Bob, we talked to so many people on the podcast and naturally we move on to the subject of just how important it is to have support, both financially but also other support as well. And I just wonder from your point of view, what it's like knowing that you are pretty much instrumental for some of these riders being able to fulfil their dream.
Well, I've always liked to sponsor the up-and-coming lads, you know, and I sponsored Marcus for 6 years, Marcus Simpson, great lad, and Marcus moved on to better things, you know, and then I linked up with Feraldo. Together we're sort of hoping to do... We've had a win last year and we're hoping to get probably another bike on board for and planning for next year now. So, you know, I'll get great enjoyment out of it. A lot of the lads, they're most appreciative. You know, a set of tyres or a bit of fuel, you know, it all helps. And I didn't do it myself, but... I've tried to help the ones I can help, you know, if you know what I mean. So, as I say to anybody, if you want a sponsor, just go in the paddock and speak to one of the lads, you know. They'll be glad for even if it's £20, £50, you know, it all helps. And that's how I started, you know. Just I used to come to the Isle of Man in the early 70s and I met up with an old friend and his son started racing here in 1996 and... I said, tell him I'll sponsor him. And that's how, in 97, I sponsored him. And just progressed from there, really, you know. It's if you walk around the paddock, you can see how people are fixed, you know, and with some of them, and if you can help them a bit, then that's great, you know.
So tell me how you two met then. How did that come about?
Well, I obviously I sponsored Gary Vines, the late Gary Vines, and, excuse me... and after Gary's death, I'd got the bike I'd bought for Gary to race, and I'd more or less finished with the racing. And then Jim Hunter contacted me, who's a mutual friend, and he said, Bob, is there any chance of you letting Feraldo have the KTM for the Manx Grand Prix? I said, well, I don't know him. So then he organised us to meet up for a coffee in Peel. Straight away, I gelled with Franco and I said, yeah, no problem, I'll get you the bike. And so he took the bike on and the rest is history, you know, with Mikey Evans on board. He won the ultra lightweight last year, which was brilliant, as a tribute to Gary. So, brilliant.
That was an incredibly moving moment. So, Francesco, just before we talk more about the support that you've had from Bob, just tell us about how you got started out. Where did it all begin for you?
Oh, that's a good question. I think it all started when I was 10 years old. I mean, I come from a family where nobody ever raced, but my dad, he bought a bike when I was 10 years old for himself to go on the road, and he was taking me around for a ride every night. And I was, like, scary because, like, I was so young and the helmet was too big for me and it was moving every time. And I was, like, shaking, but I was going home and I was happy and... fell in love straight away. There was a day that they were riding like mini motors inside my town, and I asked my dad if I could try one, so I jumped on it and I never stopped riding a bike from that day.
Oh, and what did your dad think about it? Clearly he had a love for bikes, he hadn't particularly raced himself, but what did he think about you really taking to it in that way?
To be honest, for him was more like a joke and having a fun during the weekend. He never wanted me to race properly because when we were going to a few different tracks, I was still quicker than other riders, but it was like, okay, calm down now and we're going to go home because it's just a play for a weekend because it costs too much. So till I got to 18 years old, I had to stop riding. Well, I was riding, but just weekends as a track days. So I never raced. And then when I start working by myself, I decide to start racing.
Wow. And were the family okay with that? Because clearly, obviously, as we know, it is a dangerous sport, but one that you get a tremendous amount of enjoyment from as well. But it takes everything, doesn't it? It takes over your life.
Yeah, it is. Because from when I was 10 till now, I didn't have a life, to be honest. I was almost thinking about bike and I'm still thinking about bike any time. Like at the moment, I'm sitting here and I'm thinking about how to set up the paddock and everything else. So, yeah, I didn't have a proper life.
And had you heard of the Isle of Man and the mountain course at that point?
The thing with the Isle of Man was that because racing was so expensive, I started racing in the hill climb championships. And doing the hill climbs that is on the road, I know it's something different from the Isle of Man, but most of the people that they were doing the races there, they were talking about the Isle of Man, so I was like, okay, maybe in a few years I would like to go there and see how is it and everything else. And as soon as I got to 20 years old, I decided to move over here.
Big, big move, isn't it? I mean, have you ever thought, I don't know, has there ever been any regrets?
Well, the thing is that I moved over here when I was 20. I don't remember if it was... I was about 20, and I went to London to move from London to the Isle of Man. And then, because my was my first experience out from Italy, I fell in love with London, so I stayed in London too long. And then I came over here in 2015, and I stayed here for 1 year. But the move from London to the Isle of Man was quite bad because, I mean, like, you get everything in London and over here you don't have anything. And plus, I was over here without a bike and without anything. So it's been, like, the longest year of my life. And then I decided to go back to Italy.
And then, presumably, you thought, actually, it's worth giving it another go?
Yeah, when I moved back to Italy, I started working on... Well, I started, like, a project that was building bikes. And I started posting on Facebook and people were getting in touch with me. And most of the people were from UK and Ireland. So I thought maybe I should move back to UK or do something like that. Yeah, I don't know. I just decided to come back to the Isle of Man just because, I don't know. Like, when I left London was okay. When I left the Isle of Man, I was crying because it was bad to move away from here.
Wow. I think that's the thing, isn't it? Especially if you've been somewhere like London, we know, like, it's so, you know, it's a 24-hour city, isn't it? And it's a very different pace of life here. But as you found, it does have a pull, doesn't it? It does bring you back.
It does, especially because I was like, the apartment was down in Port Erin on the prom. So we had a nice view as well. And it was, yeah, it was bad living this place, to be honest. I mean, if I had a bike over here, I think I will stay in the airport, yeah.
Oh, but presumably, obviously, you sorted that out now. You got your bike sorted. And when was the first time you raced over here that you remember?
First year, well, we moved over here. It was in September 2019. And I had the bike with me, so I decided to start racing in 2020 as soon as the season started.
2020 was an interesting year, obviously, because, quite a few things happened. And that, again, must have been so tough for you being over here when, you know, everyone in the world was going through the COVID pandemic.
Yeah, you know what? I think it's been the best 2 years of my life because the work was the best thing because everybody were at home doing nothing and they were ordering so many parts instead of going out. So I was working a lot. And plus, the races were lovely because the weather was very good. We knew that we could just go out just for racing and not do any more than racing. So it was good. Very good 2 years.
Oh, that's brilliant to hear. And I guess actually we need to remember how lucky we were over here on the Isle of Man. Actually, we had a lot more freedom than a lot of other places. So, I mean, Bob told us a little bit about how you two first got in touch. And again, just thinking about what it means to you as a rider to have the support of somebody like Bob, that sponsorship. What does it mean?
Well, it means everything, as you were asking before to him. Like, without any support, you can't do anything. I don't want to talk all about me, but it's the same for everybody. People, like, sometimes they see a big truck or nice bikes and they think you got money, but they don't know that all the money you got is invested in them, in the bikes. So that means you don't have any more money for racing or doing something else. So having Bob on board means a lot, to be honest.
And you really have taken to the scene over here. I know you race a lot at Jerby and you've done incredibly well up there. I mean, how do you find that side of things?
Don't know. I just want to ride a bike and enjoy it. Then if results come, well, better. But
well, you did get two results. I think, was it right? You won two ARA Ironman Championships, so that in 2024. So clearly, as well as this passion, you've got this incredible talent.
Yeah, like I won it the first year in 2020, and then I won it again in 2021. And then 22, 23, I was not very focused in the races over here because I was more into the, like, managing my team with other riders. And then 2024, I decided to come back and just ride it properly again. So, yeah.
That must be really interesting, literally seeing it from both sides. So obviously riding yourself, but also being responsible for other riders, which must just be a whole other level of stress.
Yeah, a lot of stress, especially now during the Manx Grand Prix. But I think that everything I learned as a rider, I learned it because I was managing the team. So like watching other riders and helping the other riders helped me to make the right move on my own bikes as well. So I think it's very important to try as much as possible everything.
And as we're talking now, it's the Friday just before MGP qualifying gets started on Sunday. Who have you got riding this year? What's the plan?
Well, the plan is, I had a plan and then I had to change it in the last few weeks. So at the moment, we got an Italian rider. It's Maurizio Bottalico. To be honest, I have a lot of pressure after last season because everybody now is expecting a good result. While for me now at the moment, because I never been working on a classic bike, for me the goal is more like trying to learn as much as possible and forget about the results, to be honest.
Yeah, it must be difficult, I suppose, feeling like you've got that pressure. I mean, I know it won't come from you, Bob, but I mean, how well do you think riders manage that side of things when they feel like they've got a duty, a responsibility to the people who are supporting them?
It's never bothered me about results. As long as they go out there, have a safe ride and enjoy it, I'm happy. Anything else is a bonus. So, and I've always had that. Even when I started sponsoring Jack Hunter a few years ago, I'd never met his mother. His mother phoned me up, you know, she's concerned about me sponsoring him and pressure. I said, look, there's no pressure from me whatsoever. All I wanted to do is go out there and enjoy his racing. End of story. And that was it, you know. I've never looked for results, you know. I wasn't there for the glory. I'm not there for the glory. I'm there to help him, and to see him out there on track means everything to me.
And where do you spend your time? You know, when a race meeting is on and you've got one of your riders out there, where are you? What are you doing?
9 times out of 10, I'm marshalling. You know, I marshal most days, you know, race days and practice. I've had riders in the past say, you ought to come and spend some time with us in the... And I said, I'm out the way. You know, I'd rather be out on track, let them get on with the job. I'm in the way. And that's how I see it, you know. And, you know, I like to put a bit back. I enjoy my marshalling. Normally I'm at Sarah's Cottage, great team up there, you know, and I just enjoy the company of everybody, you know. The fans, it's just amazing. The atmosphere is just unbelievable.
How long have you been marshalling for?
About 6 or 7 years now. I just pulled up one evening at Sarah's Cottage and they were short of marshals. So Paul, who's a deputy, was deputy there. I pulled up on my bike and he said, are you a marshal? I said, no, but I can be. He said, well, we're short. So I went online and I had to go there the next night and fill all the paperwork in. And yeah, that's a few years ago now. I think 6 or 7 years ago, probably. Probably longer than that. Time goes by, doesn't it? You know, very quickly. But no, I enjoy it. You know, it's great to be a part of it.
And there's real friendships that are made, aren't there, throughout
that?
Well,
unbelievable. You know, you meet people. I've gone and I've been to Australia a few times since 2020 and I've gone out to meet people I've met on the Isle of Man. You know, it's unbelievable. The Isle of Man's known all around the world. It's amazing, you know. I'm always wearing an Isle of Man T-shirt and people stop me in the street, you know. Oh, well, Isle of Man, you know. You know, my grandparents used to live there, you know, and amazing. It's always linked up.
The other thing, Bob, that you have been instrumental in setting up is the Lease Motorcycle Museum in Peel. You're obviously a motorcycle collector as well. Do you know how many you've got? Dare I ask?
The wife might be listening, okay. So I better not say.
3 or 4, yeah?
Yeah. Now, I've got probably round about 45, 50 bikes in total.
When did it start becoming a collection?
Probably about 45 years ago. Bought my first bike then. And actually, it was an old BSA. I've still got it. And I bought it across in 1982. I think it was, and I was looking at the logbook about 10 years later. It belonged to a guy from the Isle of Man originally, so that was amazing, wasn't it? I've still got that bike, yeah.
And how did the Motorcycle Museum in Peel come about?
I've got a place in Peel. I've had there for 18 years, and I came over with... I've got a Slippery Sam replica, a Triumph Trident, that Mick Grant won his first TT on the original Slippery Sam. I came over with that, and I was unloaded out the van, and... the curator from the Lease Museum was walking by. Roy Baker, his name was. Great old boy. And he said, any chance of me having a bike for the TT to put in the museum? I said, well, you can have this one. I came over to do Jeff Duke's tribute lap, follow the hearse round, you know. And anyway, put it in the museum and I went back home, came back for the TT and I popped my head round the door and said, how's that bike doing? He said, I can't believe the people coming in here to look at that bike. And then he showed me the old jail. So I thought, could do something with that. And he was on about, they were on a rumour as if they were going to shut the museum because of not many people going in there. So I said to him, look, get me a meeting with the town commissioners. We'll have a bike museum in there. He said, you're joking. I said, no, we're serious. So I said, but make sure it's not a race day if we have a meeting. Anyway, we had a meeting and I told them what I'd like to do and they said, yeah, no problem. And they supported us all the way along. And of course, the museum, it's packed TT and Manx Grand Prix time and, you know, it's done really well. And for the first few years, it really kept it going. And then Peel Heritage Trust took over upstairs and it's brilliant, you know, the way they've done it upstairs now. So you've got Peel history upstairs and the West. And downstairs, the bikes. And we send people up there from viewing the bikes and they come back and say, unbelievable what's up there, you know. They've really enjoyed it, you know, the whole thing. So.
And you've got somewhere to keep the bikes and your wife never needs to know they're yours.
But we have a couple of bikes at the back that you can go and sit on and have your photograph taken. An old artist in Peel, Roland Noble, I contacted Roland when I got the all clear off the town commissioners and he came back and did a mural of coming down from Kate's Cottage to the Craig. Absolutely fantastic. So we put a couple of bikes there and it looks as though you're coming down the road to the Craig. You know, the visitors can sit on there and have the photographs took and a few bob in the buckets, you know. So it does quite well, really.
What's your favourite bike in there?
It's a job to say, really. I've got quite a few, really. I think I've got the I put one in out a couple of years ago. I've got Air Mackie. It's a 350 Air Mackie, which has won about 8 Manx Grand Prix. It came second to Agostini in the 1970 Junior TT. So that's got to be among one of the top ones, I suppose, really. Richard Swallow, the late Richard Swallow, won 5 Manx Grand Prix on the trot on it. Steve Moynan won his in 1971. So it's got loads of history, you know, it's brilliant.
And so many memories attached, aren't there?
Oh, yeah.
Are they all still working?
99% of them are, yes. Within an hour, I can get any one of them running. Obviously, we get them out, the classic and vintage race bikes, on our Peel Day. Get them outside and have a grid formation and start some of them up, you know, it's really good.
The sound of that must be absolutely incredible.
Well, yeah, this year we usually have it outside the sailing club, but this year we're having it on East Quay, so that'll be right outside the museum. And we've got the vintage club joining us and the classic car club there as well, so there's a bit of everything for everybody, so we should have a really good day.
When is this happening?
Thursday the 21st, practice week, so it's next Thursday.
So that is a must-go-to event for any bike enthusiast.
Yeah, we like to get the bikes there for midday. Hopefully Dave Molyneux's coming with his classic sidecar outfit. Des Connor comes with his MV Augusta, you know, and one or two others. Feraldo will be there with a couple of our bikes. So anybody who's got a classic or vintage or modern race bike, they can come. They can either come and parade it, you know, static parade or start them up. So the more the merrier.
And you mentioned Dave Molyneux. You used to sponsor him, didn't you?
Not in a very big way, but, you know, I've helped him out when I can, you know, the last few years. I've always admired Dave and I must tell you the first time I actually met him personally. We'd bought our apartment in Peel and they'd got a show home there. It was a Sunday afternoon. I was in the courtyard out the back and this couple came through and I said, oh, everything all right? I said, oh, we've been to the show home. It's shut. I said, well, you can come and have a look at mine. So, of course, Dave and his wife at the time came in and had a cup of tea and he saw I got a bit of memorabilia around at my apartment and he said, oh, I do a bit of racing. I said, do you? I said, what's your name then? He said, Dave Molyneux. I nearly fell over because he was all smart. I didn't recognise him. So I said, oh, God blimey, Dave, I'm ever so sorry, you know. So that was quite funny, really, you know. So
again, it's those chance meetings, isn't it, and those friendships that form out of that.
Well, and another day I was in the courtyard again and I was talking to my neighbour and this young blonde girl came walking down, same thing. She wanted to look at the apartment but it was shut and my neighbour said, oh, Bob will show you round his. So I thought, all right, okay, yeah, no problem. Took the young lady up into my apartment and the balcony doors was open on the key and she started shouting down to this guy. So I went onto the balcony and I said, who are you calling? She said, oh, my boyfriend. And I looked round, it was Guy Martin. I shouted down to him, do you want a cup of tea? So he came up and he spent about an hour with us having a cup of tea and a natter. That was back in about 2009, I think. So that was another, you know.
Motorcycle magnet, that's where you are. Francesco, something else that you're really passionate about is mentoring other younger riders. I mean, it's not like you're old yourself, but, you know, those younger riders just starting out. Why is that so important for you?
I'm not doing too much. I would love to do more, but I'm only doing what I can at the moment. But I'm always thinking about what I did have in my life, and I just would like to give it to someone else. Even a stupid thing, like just a paint job. Like, I never had a nice paint job on my bike. So even give it that one for free to someone or trying to help in any way, I just like to do it. And especially from last year, I found out that helping others is very important. In the past, I always trying to achieve everything for myself. And after last year, when we did that thing with Bob about using that KTM for Gary, I just felt that helping and doing something for someone else is even better. Just trying to help some young rider would be nice.
And I think it's great for people who are starting out to hear from somebody like you and hopefully sometimes try and avoid some of the pitfalls because it's there's so much to take into account.
Yeah, but I just like to stay there and just be present. And then if they want something, then I can help them. But I don't like to go to someone and just say, OK, you have to do this or you have to learn this. It's just I just want to be there and then is up to them if they need help or no.
Tell me about your partner. Is she into bikes as well?
I think she hates them now. But she's been with me for 12 years now, so she has to stay with bikes. She has no other options.
And that's what you need, isn't it? Is somebody who's very understanding and supportive.
Yeah, I think it's as much important as having sponsors, because without her, I couldn't do anything till now. Having someone that she supports you in everything you do or every country you go, because she moved from Italy to London with me, and then we went back to Italy, came to the Isle of Man, back to Italy, went to Ireland, and then came here again. So she's coming everywhere I go.
Oh, that is incredible. So you were saying just a little while ago, obviously with a Friday before qualifying week starts on Sunday, your head is just thinking about paddock stuff and all of that. Give us an idea of what the next couple of weeks are going to be like for you.
Oh, crazy. Yeah, it's going to be very stressful. I know I should not be stressed, but I'm always so much worried about everything and just make sure is everything okay and safe for the riders. That's the most important thing, is safety first.
I know, yeah, it must be so, so difficult. And again, that's the same for you, Bob, isn't it? You kind of like, obviously, there's huge enjoyment, but that level of worry must always be there.
Well, that's why I get out of the way. I go marshalling and leave them to it. You know, I have worked in the pits a few times, you know, in the early days with Matt Jackson and one or two others. So I've done all that. I just enjoy being out there doing my bit.
Yeah, it's very important, this thing that, like, sometimes you find sponsors that they are there and they're trying to stay too much inside and give you more pressure and everything, while having someone like Bob that is not giving you any pressure and he gives you full trust. Because, like, even the first time I only met him for a coffee and he left me a bike in my unit that is worth a lot of money. So having that trust and say you can find any rider you want, just do whatever you want, is important. Yeah.
Really is. And just on the subject of sort of giving back and supporting other riders, Francesco, one of the things you're known for is the extraordinary repair efforts that you did for the Ben Birchall's sidecar when there was that incident they were involved in TT 2024. Just talk to us about that. What happened?
Well, everybody knows about that repair, but doesn't know that I had to repair that sidecar 1 week before as well, because I think when they came over, the awning fell on the sidecar, so they were looking for someone to repair it. So they came to, well, I received a call and it was like, I'm Ben Birchall, and I was like I couldn't believe it was him. And they say, can you repair it? And I said, yeah, no problem, come to my unit. So I did that repair, and then he was so happy, because otherwise he had the bike was not right to go out. And then unfortunately they had that big crash, and straight away they called me back again. So I went there in the evening, I think it was about 11 o'clock. And as soon as the bike came back, I was looking at the bike and I was like, oh my God. So from 11 o'clock, I spent like 36 hours without stopping, working on the bike all night and the day after, trying to fix it and then spray it again and get it ready to go back racing. A friend of mine, Roger Mayer, was with me and he helped me for the 36 hours, so we did it together. And yeah, it was an incredible job and it was nice to see it out again.
There's so much that we could talk about, but obviously it is coming up to qualifying week and I know you're anxious to get back up there and start preparing. Do you stay up at the paddock or do you go home?
Well, last year, for the first time, I decided to not stay in the paddock. I didn't have any warning, nothing. I was just going just a few minutes before scrutineering, loading the bike in the van, going to scrutineering and back home every night and working the workshop. And I think was the best thing ever because I had no distraction at all. But this year, I want to try to stay back in the paddock and just enjoy the evening, just having a chat with other people as well. So, yeah, I think we'll stay there for 2 weeks.
Well, we wish you all the very best. Where can people follow your progress? Are you on social media?
Yeah, I got a page on Facebook and Instagram, but to be honest, it's not the best. I'm very bad with social media. Like, I usually just enter, post something about it and go out straight away. I know it's not the right way to do, but yeah.
How are your rider's feelings, Maurizio? Because he had that incident, didn't he, in TT? I mean, the most hardcore person, I think, carrying on after he had that slight incident. How is he now?
Yeah, he's okay. Can I just say about that? Because, like, I was, like, working my workshop and he rang me. I knew he was racing and I was watching the lap times and everything. And I saw that he finished the race. And then he rang me straight away after and he was like, can you come to the hospital? And I was like, why? What's going on? I say, I hit a wall and I got a big cut on my shoulder. And I couldn't believe it. I was like, okay, he's joking because he finished the race, so it's just joking. And then he starts sending me a picture of this cut on his shoulder. So I had to rush to the hospital because he couldn't speak any English. And yeah, I can't believe how did it, like, finishing a lap with that cut on his shoulder, I guess.
It was unbelievable. I mean, those photographs were shared on social media. I mean, it makes me wince just thinking about it. Just, I don't know, was it adrenaline that took over or was he just superhuman?
Yeah, I think he's superhuman. But the picture that he's shown on Facebook is nothing compared to what I see inside the hospital. They almost need another bed for myself.
I can completely understand that. Well, we wish you all the very best and look forward to chatting to you when we're down in the MGP paddock when it all gets going on Sunday. And Bob, so you'll be at Sarah's cottage, will you?
Well, yeah, I'm moving around a bit this time, mainly at Sarah's cottage. I'm doing the odd day here and there, you know, so I'm not in the same place all the time. So usually bottom of Bigarro, Ginger Hall, a little session at the Gooseneck, you know, an evening. And so Sarah's my favourite. Roy there, I must say, you know, it's 1970 prices, you know, for your burger and your tea or coffee, you know. Brilliant. Seating's free. You know, it's really, really good.
And I know, obviously, you talked about having your place over here. I understand you spend quite a bit of time in Australia. Are you a bit of a weather seeker as well?
The first time I went to Australia was 2020. January 2020, we sailed from Southampton, and it was for my 70th birthday and my wife's 60th birthday year. So we thought we'd do it. We'd never done it before, and we've been back four times since. But we go, like, our winter for a couple of months. So I've fallen in love with Australia. Must admit, it's an amazing country.
And I bet you've met people from the Isle of Man there.
I have, yeah. It's unbelievable. You can't go anywhere. And I always wear my Isle of Man TT T-shirt on, or Manx Grand Prix, or my cap. I always get people stopping me, or in the pubs, you know, at night they'll come up, oh, you know, we went there in such and such a year. And it's amazing, you know, it really is. In fact, I had a phone call yesterday. A guy came in the museum 2 years ago, and he was south of Adelaide. Russ Leake, his name is, and used to race sidecars here in the late 60s, early 70s. And I met him this March, and we got on great, you know, so he's coming back over next year, hopefully. Small world.
Have you been banned from buying any more bikes?
Not really, but I've stopped now. You know, the Lease Museum, I can't get any more in there. So I've got a few in the house of my nanin at the moment, you know, so. And I've got some in the garage. I just keep changing them over. So, yeah. Peel is, it's great there, you know, with the museum and everything. And I like to see people coming in there, enjoying the bikes. And you hear that many stories, you know, people coming there. Oh, that's what I used to have when I was a lad. And it's great. I've had guys sat on the bikes in the 90s having the photographs took, you know, and it's wonderful, you know, get them all smiling. They might come in a bit miserable. They always go out with a smile on the face, you know, so.
What a wonderful thing. Bob, Francesco, thank you so much for being here and we wish you all the very best for the next couple of weeks. Thank you.
Thank you, Beth.
Thank you.
Wobbly Bob Taylor and Francesco Ferraldo, just absolutely brilliant talking to them. And, you know, especially thinking about Bob as a sponsor, you wouldn't want to have anybody else in your corner, would you? What an incredibly supportive, wonderful person he is. And if you are in Peel on the 21st of August, that's Thursday the 21st of August, then do head to the Leith Motorcycle Museum, because that is going to be an incredible sight and sound. Journey to a Dream is brought to you by Kawasaki Insurance, and you can find out more about them by visiting their website. It's kawasaki-insurance.co.uk. As I also mentioned, we're so grateful for the support of the Andreas Racing Association and Lee Bartram especially, who just make sure that we have many wonderful guests on this podcast. The link to their page is on the podcast page, so do check them out. Remember, Gerby Day is coming up on Sunday the 24th of August. We will be there from Manx Radio broadcasting live as well. So hope to see you there, and we will talk to you next time on the Journey to a Dream podcast.